think they'll melt the cheese on the burgers? I like the cheese melted.
Do you think they'll melt the cheese? What the hell does that mean? It's only a few days to Father's Day, and if you're a dad, or about to become one, or you're anybody who wants to know the secret of life, it is contained within the cheeseburger scene of that long-forgotten movie. Hang on, and you'll discover the secret.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
Well, listen to that. To some, it's the sweetest sound in the world. To others, the most terrifying. That sound scared hell out of me in my youth. Babies, fatherhood, the two final links in the anchor chain that would sink adventure and drown freedom forever. That was pretty much how I felt until my first daughter was born. Then everything changed. I can't explain why. I don't think anyone can. But the moment your kid appears, a tectonic shift happens in your priorities. They somehow rewire your mind. What you want slips from top of the list, replaced by what they need. At least that's how it should work. When it doesn't work that way, when dad and or mom still rank themselves number one in their universe, well, you can visit the results of that mindset at any prison or drug rehab facility. That's not to say that kids should get their way all the time. That's another ticket to disaster. Parents who let their kids run wild in a classy restaurant or disrupt schoolrooms or pitch a fit when they don't get their way. Well, if you look close, those parents are invariably assholes themselves and continuing the bloodline of assholes. What's scary about fatherhood is the responsibility. This tiny creature is utterly helpless, and it's up to you and mommy to keep it on track for 20 years or more. And they look at you with those innocent eyes that say, "You're grown up, you know everything." And what you want to say is, "Yeah, I'm grown up, but I'm still figuring most things out. And everybody else is too." You see your baby, 7 or 8 pounds of trusting, needy tabula rasa, and you think to yourself, "I better not mess this up. I want her or him to have everything. And if they can't have everything, the least I can do is draw them a map of where the landmines are buried. I have to warn them not to make the same mistakes I made." But there are endless distractions. Making a buck, paying the bills. And then kids go to school, and you spend dinner time trying to deprogram them from the commie horseshit they bombard them with in the classroom. So there isn't a lot of time to say what needs to be said. The old bromide goes, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Well, it's also the foundation of wisdom. Unless a concept can be articulated in a few words or seconds, it probably won't be understood or retained. There might be just 3 levels of learning or understanding, and the most elemental is the physical. When my daughter was about 3, someone gave us a waffle iron. It was electric. We'd plug in and outside and have breakfast as we looked out at the mountains. I warned her repeatedly not to touch the waffle iron. It was hot, and if she touched it, it would burn her and hurt her, and she'd cry and keep on hurting long after she touched it. She nodded agreement and said, "Okay, Daddy." Well, my speech was the equivalent of a teacher in school. I'd call that level 3 learning. Practically worthless. The moment my back was turned, I heard a blood-curdling scream. Looked around to see her holding 2 fingers that were red as a boiled lobster. She had just experienced level 1 learning. A lesson that never has to be taught twice. Those usually are physical, and with luck, the student gets hurt but not damaged. Level 2 learning is an artfully executed lesson delivered not as instruction, but almost subliminally, preferably in some emotional context. I detest the word, but the one that works best is poignant, emotionally moving yet subtle, delivered obliquely, not on the nose. It almost hurts to watch, but you cannot look away, and your discomfort or pain is usually rooted in self-revelation. When you see you in some fictive character and you do not like what you see, that leaves an impression. Maybe not a scar, but a welt. And that can be a beneficial welt. This is where I return to the clip at the top of the show. The movie was one you've probably never heard of, but it's my favorite of all time. It's called The Last Detail. It starred Jack Nicholson. And many cineasts claim it was his finest performance, even better than Cuckoo's Nest, which earned him an Oscar. It's a simple story. Two grizzled Navy lifers are languishing around Norfolk Naval Base, awaiting orders, when they are assigned a detail, a task, and that is to take a convict to a military prison in Portsmouth, Maine. The prisoner is played by Randy Quaid. His crime was attempting to steal $40 from a charity box on base, and for that, he is sentenced to 8 years. Why so harsh? Because he stole from the Admiral's wife's pet charity. So there's a lesson right there about bureaucracy and politics and the vindictiveness of people who run government agencies or their wives. Quaid is a hapless klepto, not a mean bone in his body, product of a broken home, absent father, an alcoholic mother. He never had a chance. So Nicholson and this other sailor have 5 days to deliver this kid to jail, and they decide to drag their feet a bit and try to show him a good time along the route. Maybe raise his self-esteem from lower-than-whale shit. They take him ice skating in Rockefeller Center to a cat house, several bars. And one stop along the way is an old-time luncheonette. It's in Baltimore and bitter cold. They stand outside the restaurant in their peacoats as clouds of steam plume from their mouths. They stamp their feet, try to keep warm as they look through the window at the lunch crowd inside. That's when the kid asks about the cheeseburgers.
Think they'll melt the cheese on the burgers? I like the cheese melted.
Right there, that line resonated with me. As a kid, I sometimes ate at a pal's house whose mom had a thing for John Barleycorn. Whether lunch or dinner, the menu was always the same. Cheeseburgers. She'd fry them up, and the results were also the same. Ice-cold hockey pucks floating in a puddle of congealing gray grease. The cheese was Velveeta, fresh from the fridge, peeled off a square brick and laid on top. It was so fucking cold, it didn't even droop at the corners. It sat there on the meat, stiff as an asphalt shingle. So yeah, I could relate to the sailor's concern about melting cheese. Once inside the booth, Nicholson eyeballs the kid's plate and asks him if the cheese is melted. And here, we arrive at the essence of the character and perhaps the greatest chunk of wisdom ever delivered on the silver screen.
Cheese melted in there for you?
Sure.
Ain't melted at all.
Send it back.
It's all right.
Send the goddamn thing back, Meadows. You're paying for it.
It's all right.
Meadows, have it the way you want it.
Waiter!
Melt the cheese on this for the chief, would you? Thank you.
Chief Meadows,
trust your bean to have it the way that you want it.
Now that audio is a smidge muddy, so I'll clarify. The kid, being a passive lifelong loser, does not want to complain, doesn't want to make waves. He accepts the unmelted cheese on his burger and lies about it to Nicholson. Nicholson snatches the bun off the top, sees the unmelted cheese. He then summons the waiter, sends it back to the kitchen, asking the cheese be melted for the chief. He gives the kid a raise in rank, and he tells him, kid, have it the way you want it. You're paying for it. That brief scene, so perfectly written, acted, and shot, is perhaps the single most valuable piece of advice any father can give to his kid. It's the difference between finding success and fulfillment in life, or accepting failure and abuse. The mantra of this podcast, the mission statement, is take no shit. That doesn't mean to break someone's jaw every time you're slighted, but at the most basic level, to demand satisfaction in what you're paying for or entitled to, do not accept your fate. Do not go along to get along. Losing and winning are habitual. I was a kid when I first watched that movie, and that scene was bolted into my brain. It just said so much. It's partly the genesis of this show decades later. Everybody puts up with some bullshit, cold cheese or whatever. But if we make it customary, we are destined to a crappy life. Maybe 8 years in the brig for petty theft. Or at the very least, a lot of shitty meals. Most parents berate their kids if they hear them use foul language. What they should really look out for are phrases and figures of speech that neurolinguistically program them for failure. It's okay. I don't mind. It's fine. The F word, huh? These phrases, they're all right in occasional use, but they can become a crutch for compliance. The verbiage of the soft surrender, the subversion of the self. It's okay if you're a cloistered monk, but if you intend to live life in the general population, you got to grow some elbows and expunge those phrases from your vocabulary. I dig the last detail for more than just that scene. It's also a fantastic departure from Hollywood bullshit. There are no capes, no explosions, no stunts, no CGI. It's gritty and real. At this moment, Maverick, the sequel to Top Gun, is enjoying some box office success, and I might go see it, but I know it's a nutty fantasy, as was the first movie. Impossibly good-looking people, great babage, death-defying stunts, shiny spotless sets and props, orange sunsets, summer temperatures, luxurious wardrobes, exotic locations, huh? Pure escapism. And there's nothing wrong with that. The servicemen I've known tell me the last detail was the real deal, authentic. Military life is rarely, if ever, glamorous. The barracks suck. The food sucks. There's plenty of tedium and ennui. Plenty of pricks among the officers. Ball-breaking bureaucrats, back-breaking cots, busy work, hurry up and wait. In my 17th summer, I worked security at LaGuardia Airport in New York. It was kind of a fun job back then. The stewardesses were still hot-looking, and they liked to flirt. We were not the TSA. We had no attitude with passengers. The job was mostly done by college kids and retirees, and one of them was a newly retired Paris Island DI named Sam Baxter. Think Lou Gossett in An Officer and a Gentleman. Sam and I became good friends. At that time, I was getting a full-court press from recruiters. Letters, daily phone calls, offers of signing bonuses, shit like that. For a while, I considered joining up, putting college off until Sam got wind of it. Ooh, what happened next was one of the pivotal moments of my life, almost a level one learning experience. Sam knew in a glance I was not cut out for military life. He actually was amused by my innate contempt for authority. It was an incredible scene, which I recounted word for word back in episode 12, Skeletons in Larry's Closet. You'll find it under the March 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. Of course, my father was a Navy vet and could have told me everything Sam Baxter did, but he would not have carried the same authority. Like the saying goes, a prophet is never recognized in his own land. And the dads listening know this to be true. It's a common lament especially when kids hit their teens. Like the other bromide says, when I was 18, I was convinced my father was a moron. By the time I hit 30, I was amazed how much he had learned. Some time ago, I wrote a book entitled Mac Daddy. It did pretty well and became a lightning rod for controversy. Hollywood hates fathers. Dad is always depicted as a half-wit, an ass-scratching, beer-swilling slob who watches football and can barely form a sentence. But Mom, oh Mom, she's always hip, slick, and cool, with a six-figure job and a snarky quip about Dad for every situation. He's basically a punchline for every sitcom, and has been for decades. Besides being a primer on child-rearing from birth to school age, my book was an answer to Hollywood's war on fathers. People either loved it or hated it. There has been a cultural war on fathers for a long time, and that is unquestionably a major reason America is circling the drain. 5 years ago, I recorded my first Father's Day show. It was episode 28. To my astonishment and delight, that podcast inspired a number of married guys to partake in the greatest, most joyful adventure of all, fatherhood. A listener asked me to read aloud the closing passage from that book. This may be a good time to reprise that reading. If, when it's finished, you like what you heard and want to support the show, you can learn how at thatlarryshow.com. Here's that reading. If you believe nothing else, believe this. Tempus fugit. The years will whip by like fence posts on a freeway. Your son or daughter will grow and be gone. You will not enjoy the quiet. If you think you've felt a void in your heart before, it will be a pinhole in comparison to the crater your child will create when she leaves home. Your baby will always be your baby. Regardless of your child's accomplishments, she will be your baby. Whether Pulitzer or Nobel Prize winner, corporate titan, entrepreneurial phenomenon, outlaw biker, butcher, baker, or candlestick maker, your baby. You will never, ever love anyone with the ferocity with which you will love your child. And therefore, no person wields the power to shatter your heart as your child could. This is your most important relationship. Treat it as if your life depended on it. Now let's close the karmic loop. If you have a baby, hold him now. Close your eyes. Open your mind. Watch the images slowly dissolve from one to the other. See your baby crawl, walk, talk, laugh, cry, rage, go to school, run, stumble, fall, and rise. See her ride a bike, driving a car, holding a diploma, throwing a bouquet. See her with her own kids. See her with gray in her hair, sitting quietly, looking at a faded picture of the two of you. Hear her whisper, "Daddy." Is she smiling her trillion-watt smile? If so, you were a hell of a Mac Daddy. And so this Father's Day, even if the old man ain't perfect, and none of us are, give him a hug and tell him you love him, because nobody lasts forever.